Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nivesesa Sunyavadi Asyajade Satarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, first of all I would like to say thank you to all of you that you have so kindly come to observe together this 1 week retreat. I would like to tell you how this idea of having a retreat came about. It was Raj Bihari Prabhu's idea, who is conducting for a long time now the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education, which was begun by Burijan Prabhu. I remember when Krishna Chetra Prabhu and myself were the students in this Institute for Higher Education. From my own experience, that the study of Transcendental Shastra in Vrindavan opened a different and deeper dimension to us than we have had experienced in other places so far. And I know that from the very beginning of the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education, both Burijan Prabhu, and who started it originally, and the other teachers were highly aware of the necessity to not only transfer technical knowledge of the scripture, but also something like a realization, knowing well that the spiritual subject cannot be learned by the brain, but more by the heart. If you refer to heart as a place where perception and experience takes place. This concept, which was all the while in the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education, the need was felt to maybe offer a retreat where it is all about realization, all of exploration of the heart, all of these things which have to do with the things which move in the spiritual heart, which have to do with realization, perceptions, and so on. And then Braj Bihari was kind enough to approach me and link Burijan Prabhu and myself, who have become friends when I was a nervous German student of his. He took pity of my... I performed very, very bad under academic pressure of producing results. It's very bad for...
So therefore you became a teacher.
Out of the spirit of revenge, I became a teacher. Well, he linked us up together. Oh, I remember it was in Radhadesh where we phoned, and between Raj Bihari, who was the original conceiver of the idea, and then Burijan Prabhu, and later also Jagatarini Mataji, who is well known for the Vrindavan relisher, person who is of the experienced kind of person, and myself, we conceived of this idea of meeting all together in a certain frame. This frame I want to explain in a minute, so that an experience can take place. I must admit to all of you that I was becoming so over-enthusiastic that Burijan Prabhu had to personally jump on my legs and stop me, because I wanted to make it a new culture in ISKCON. But he said, no, no, very softly, very little advertisement, let's see who feels invited, for whom this is something. And in this way we have started this first thing, and we are all, at least I can say for me, I'm very nervous, because the first time in the Holy Dham where I'm lecturing on something or talking and trying to transfer some knowledge and experience to an audience. Good. This was how it came about, and now I wish to talk just 3-4 minutes on the great possibilities which lie for everyone in this retreat. Such a retreat where devotees come together for a week can be almost compared to a journey. When travelers meet for a big journey, they have a goal in mind. Like, say, for instance, travelers meet in order to reach Mount Kailash, which is in an inaccessible place in Tibet. They know we will go through the different stations and steps of the journey with this goal in mind, and we will not lose this goal in our from our eyesight. This goal keeps us together for the duration of our journey. And we will help each other as much as possible to reach this goal, because we know to reach Mount Kailash, I mean, everyone should be reached there. If someone falls sick in such a group, the group has to stop, or and so on. So I personally do not wish to say what the goal of this great journey should be in a specific way, because you all are individual persons, and I think, therefore, you might have individual goals as you come here, but at least there is a general goal before us, a travel goal. We want to become more Krishna conscious, more able to be devotees who serve Krishna, to love Krishna, so on. I will speak on in the afternoon what is necessary to reach such a spiritual goal, to become more Krishna conscious. It will be a transformation of the heart. The whole adventure of the Vedic civilization is transformation of the heart. We start in one type of consciousness, and on our path we will transform the I consciousness, I and mine, into I am a servant of Krishna, and Krishna is mine, my Lord. So I want to request you to not lose this goal out of mind for the time you're on the journey. You want to become Krishna conscious in a general way, whatever that means for you at this station of your life. Maybe for one it means to remember Krishna always and never forget him. Maybe for another, to become more Krishna consciousness means to watch a little bit his monster in the heart, the ego, and replace it with the desire to serve devotees. Whatever that goal is, I would request you. No, I think Burijan Prabhu, this might fit in his place. It's good to become aware of your goal of the seminar, your specific goals in the seminar at the outset. It's very, very necessary. Because if you lose this goal out of life, then you may not stay with us for the whole 6 weeks. You may stay in body with us, but not in mind. So this specific goal of yours, which is a little bit more clear than just becoming more Krishna conscious, that will be necessary to complete this journey. When travelers go to a goal, a journey together, they must be very careful to keep a certain atmosphere amongst themselves. For instance, if you go to Kailash, you are most of the time in a little jeep, 5 people, and it's very important for everyone to take care that the atmosphere is encouraging and not discouraging at all. This is very, very important. If there's trouble in the jeep, the journey is in danger. So I want to request all of you to make to be servants of a certain Krishna conscious atmosphere during the 6 weeks. Six weeks. Why not? 6 days. Because if you become servants of this atmosphere, each one of you, you will be able to experience the tremendous energy which is released when devotees come together remembering and glorifying Krishna and remembering Krishna. My request to you is shocking. I want to request you to try to not have ordinary talks between you. Try to have spiritual discussions, because it is the spiritual vibrations which we create which will carry us through this journey. We will accept the swift horse of Krishna conscious Katha to take us. Another little request I have, it is a childish request, I know. Let us try to observe punctuality. As I say it, I flush, because I was late this morning. I may offer my miserly excuses, but I will not do so here. It is important that we start with our sessions on time, because a certain energy will be generated. I want to end this little introduction by reading to you a verse where Lord Krishna explains what he considers the most essential characteristics of devotees who meet together. It is from the 11th canto, 2nd chapter, verse 55. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is so kind to the conditioned souls that if they call upon him by speaking his holy name, even unintentionally or unwillingly, the Lord is inclined to destroy innumerable sinful reactions in their hearts. Therefore, when a devotee who has taken shelter of the Lord's lotus feet chants the holy name of Krishna with genuine love, the Supreme Personality of Godhead can never give up the heart of such a devotee. One who has thus captured the Supreme Lord within his heart is to be known as Bhagavat Pradhana, the most exalted devotee of the Lord. It says here, someone who even unwillingly, not out of love, out of a high state, unintentionally even, wants to speak the holy name of the Lord, wants to come closer to the Lord. The Lord is not able to keep away from the heart of such a devotee. He stays there. Please let us try it in the 6 days. Even if our egos are sometimes unwilling and our minds are tired and ordinary or whatever, let us try to glorify Krishna here at the feet of Giriraj for 6 days. Let us try to speak like this, to act like this, to serve the devotees like this. And there is a possibility that we all reach our mount, our sacred mountain, our goal. It says further on, human beings with such saintly qualities are very rarely found in this world during Kali Yuga. Who wanted? Certainly we never see many lions together in one place. Full stop. So let us try, although at least I am a little undeveloped cat, to act during this time maturely and grown up, wanting to reach a high goal together in Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much, and I am very, very excited. I'm a little bit shy. Please allow me to serve you as good as an ordinary person like me can do. And yes, let us go together on this journey. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Giriraj ki jai, Go Premanandi Hari Hari Bo.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vinanta Samanita Namane. Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pacharane, Nivisesha Sanyavadi Pashkati Desitane. Our young cat over here, pussy cat, Maharaj Satyananda Swami, has said that he feels embarrassed and shy, both he said. So I'm also feeling embarrassed and shy. But his Maharaj's reasons are different than mine. This is the first time that he's actually taught in Vrindavan, but I've been teaching for so many years. I taught so many classes in Vrindavan, and then in 1996, really 1995, I found myself by different arrangements of Krishna unable to live here anymore. So for 13 years I lived in Vrindavan, and then all of a sudden thrust into the West, living in Perth, Australia. Have any of you ever been to Perth, Australia? only Sharanagati is merciful to us. Have any of you heard of Perth, Australia? They say it's the most isolated city in the world. Second, what's the first most?
Somewhere in Siberia.
Oh, okay. But from Vrindavan, where there are so many devotees coming through, where the atmosphere is like food that nourishes spiritually, and then into the materialistic West. Now you all have experience of that. From my experience, it slowly grinds one. Slowly, slowly, one gains some spiritual energy, and then one goes to the West, and then slowly, slowly, or sometimes quickly, quickly, that spiritual desire and spiritual energy is exchanged, is run down and then exchanged for material desires. And I need this and I need that, and I have a list that I have to go shopping and buy, that somehow or another, no matter how much time shopping I spent, it never grows shorter. It just gets longer. And I have to do this, and I need this kind of car and this kind of this. It's so many things. I've found from my own experience, in time, the West, or living in a materialistic place, associating with materialistic people, unless one is preaching very, very strongly, continuously, it really grinds one down. This is my own experience, and her experience also. Yes, it's true, isn't it? So in coming to this retreat, I have to thank, they telephoned us. We were in Perth, minding our own materialistic business, and we received a telephone call inviting us to come. And Satchinananda Swami, he had a long list, yes, to convince me, but actually didn't even have to refer to the list. But so when I think of my hope for this retreat, it's, although I feel very shy and embarrassed and worn down, my hope is that in the association of very nice, sincere devotees, and speaking about Srimad Bhagavatam, which is specifically my topic that I'll be speaking about, and by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, especially Srila Prabhupada's mercy, I'm hoping, and the mercy of all these wonderful deities, and especially Giriraj Govardhan, that the hope that I have in my heart, but that's now a little bit dim, the hope that I can one day become an actual devotee, that this will be fanned, and a little spark will start to blaze a bit. Yes, there is a hope in the nectar of devotion. It describes a hope against hope. So but that's very elevated consciousness. But at least a little hope is there in this type of association, where there's so much hearing and speaking about Krishna, that there will be a little fire lit. I have so many other things to say, but I can't remember any of them. Maybe I'll have to wait a little while. These deities are so nice, all of them. So beautiful. The kirtan was so wonderful. So, and that means that there is already a nice reciprocation amongst the devotees. So, oh yeah, once I heard of, someone told me of a different kind of retreat that they went on, and they said it was so wonderful, and there was, and all the it wasn't actually a devotee retreat, but everyone became so deeply transformed and moved on that, and they said that the atmosphere, the openness amongst the people was so great. And I think that's the key. There has to be gradually, and maybe it can't happen immediately, it can't happen by the intelligence, but it happens by association and by the mercy of Giriraj and Srila Prabhupada, and was surrounded by spiritual potency, that everyone will relax, because in the world, and living in this world, we have to put up so many defenses and protective measures, because the deepest tendency of a conditioned soul is fear. And it's right that we are fearful in the material world, because the material world is a very dangerous place. Padam padam yad vipadam natesham. And it is a place of exploitation. But in the society of devotees, if the atmosphere is correct, then everyone's hearts will become softer, a little bit softer, and the spiritual, softer and less fearful. Because when one is afraid, if I go, what happens is everyone tenses. And then when one is feeling peaceful and secure and relaxed, then the heart really softens. So I think what that takes is an increase of spiritual energy. And the whole purpose of this retreat is just that, to increase the spiritual energy and really to become saturated with spiritual energy. Saturated with spiritual energy, like a sponge that's empty and then placed in reddish water. It becomes reddish. And in association with Srila Prabhupada, practically speaking, although we were very, very young and immature at that time, we came in touch with that spiritual energy so powerfully and so sweetly. And Prabhupada, although he was a powerful general, he was so soft and sweet, like a child, just like a child. And what's a child like? We see your, what is his name? Huh? Nanda Gopal. So he's just wandering around everywhere. If you put him outside, and that's why the mother has to be very careful, he'll just wander in the same way. He'll walk in every room. Because a child has a very, very simple, fearless heart. And if he were to walk across the street by himself and there are many cars, it would be so dangerous for him. And he would be so fearful, maybe, with so many cars. But if he's holding on to his father's hand, and he knows his father is close, even in the most fearful situation, he'll be fearless and simple and soft. So if we can just hold on, as Maharaj said, if we can just hold on to the holy names of Krishna, to a deep prayerful attitude, to see how much we, and this is one thing that I've seen in the West, because for so many years, one of the things that happens when you live in Vrindavan for a while, you start feeling invulnerable, which is such an illusion. And you sometimes the FRO, the people, they remind you that you're an illusion. You're just staying here by mercy. So you start feeling invulnerable and powerful, and you're teaching, and people say, oh, what a nice class or something, oh, you helped me. But then, when you realize your own capacity, you realize that, and this is something that I've seen that happens to me in the West and all of us, that pride, that arrogance that's sitting in the heart, it becomes a little bit diminished, a little crushed. So here, if we know that we need help, that we're not great, that we're just tiny and insignificant, but yet Maya is so great and powerful, that here is a very good place to hold on tightly, like the child to the parent's hand, to Krishna's names, to the devotees, to having very open-hearted discussions with the devotees, to prayerfully dealing with Giriraj, who's right here. Giriraj is so merciful, so merciful, the best of all devotees. Hantyan Adri Abala Haridas Varajo. The best of all devotees, so kind and merciful. So what an opportunity we have. What an opportunity to take shelter of all of the items of Panchanga Bhakti, the most powerful processes of devotional service, association with devotees, holy place, holy names, holy book, deities. So it's an adventure, a journey, and let us wish each other well. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
I was just thinking this morning before coming of one time I remember hearing on a tape where Srila Prabhupada was talking, and he was, I don't remember the context in which he was speaking, but he was describing how in India it is essential that any cultured girl in front of her superiors, especially her father, her any male relatives, anybody, any teachers and so forth, she will always feel very shy and cover her head. So Srila Prabhupada was talking about how when a girl becomes a dancing girl, so young girls, they're taught to dance and they're up on the stage, and if the mother and father and the parents are in the audience, even though her natural instinct is to cover her head, she has to dance. So I feel a little awkward in this company speaking, but it seems as though it is Srila Prabhupada's desire. So I was asked to speak something on this retreat about the holy dhams. And I was telling Sachinandan Maharaj last night that I felt a little uncomfortable because, as my husband was saying, for the last now 5, 6, 7 years we've been living in Australia. And it's quite different than living in Vrindavan. And gradually one's attention turns to the practical matters, day-to-day matters, family affairs, maintaining the house, the garden, the this, the that, for a family person. And although in the back of one's mind one's always thinking, never forgets that one would like to be in Vrindavan, in a practical sense one's entire direct consciousness becomes focused on so many practical things. So when asked to speak about Vrindavan, I didn't feel very comfortable because I feel like it was quite quite easy to speak living here, because day by day you're in touch with this atmosphere, whereas in the West you're day by day in touch with a completely different atmosphere, as most everyone here knows. But then I thought, in a context which I could feel comfortable to speak, and that is in relationship to the value of the holy dham as a place of inspiration, as a place for developing complete Krishna consciousness, realization of our relationship with Krishna, and how to utilize the dharma whilst in the West. So this is the level on which I've been reflective for the last many years. So I had a few thoughts that I put on paper, and I thought it would be nice to share them, even though, like the dancing girl, I feel it would be far more intelligent just to cover my head. So I think I'll just stop here and pass the microphone back. Thank you.
So, Hare Krishna. We will be singing a little Braj song now, and then we have a lecture on transformation and which will last for about 45 minutes. I try to be punctual. And then we will take a short little meal and continue the evening with Buriram Prabhu talking on some very important principles of Sadhu Sangha, which will also set something like the mood. I think you already feel this first day of our retreat is the mood setter, so to say. There's a very nice song which we are very often singing on our preaching program. It's Krishna Govinda Govinda Gopalanandalal. Gopalanandalal, Gopalanandalal. I think you will be it will be very easy for you to catch up. It has a Vrindavan melody, and because here we are here with the dust of Vrindavan in our clothes and soon in our brains, where Gopal, the cowherd boy, roams around freely, we will sing this song. I would request that for this we only play one midanga. Good. Krishna Govinda Govinda Gopala Nandala 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 Gopalanala, 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 Gopalanala. Gopalanala, Gopalanala. Yeah. This lecture has been given in many variations. The lecture is called The Art of Transformation or The Birth of Identity. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 For many different reasons, this year's Kartik Vrata was spent by me on an island somewhere, mostly chanting and writing, trying to write a book. And when I was thinking about preparing a lecture for opening our seminar or our retreat, I was very much thinking how to do it. And in the very end, I decided to simply read to you from my diary something on transformation. Each day in the diary, I have tried to write a book, an entry about the glorification of Srimati Radharani. And here's one from Sri Prema Bhakti Chandrika. Decorate your body with the dust from the lotus feet of Sri Radhika. Then you will achieve the full grace of Sri Krishna, the lifter of Govardhan Hill. One who takes shelter of the lotus feet of Radhika, I glorify him as a great person. The entry continues. Chanting was ecstatic, especially after Nam Sankirtan of Vibhavarishesha. On the material side, however, the clouds were black. On the walk, I hurt my foot, so that I have a deep cut now. What can I do? I just can't bring myself to stay on the paths which so many people have gone before. I rather walk on my own. But this can be dangerous at times. And then I saw Death with a sickle in his hands. And only as I walked closer, I saw it was only a black burnt stump of an old tree which was burnt 20 years ago when the last great forest fire raged here. This encounter inspired me to write a little novel on a theme which several Vaishnavas of the modern times have treated before. It's called A Memorable Visit. When reading this, you will be a little shocked. This is the full intention of this entry. Like everyone, you will never believe me. Please try to understand. It's real. I have just died. And now I'm waiting. Like every one of us, I thought, no, death is something which happens to other people, not to me. Even though I was intending to write a book on death, I was never taking Srila Prabhupada's statement serious, that we all live at the brink of death. And now it has happened. Like an impossibility come true. The way it happened is no longer important to me, like all the other many things I did in my past life. All seems so distant now. But anyways, since you live on the other side of death and know me the way I appear to you, you will most probably die to know. Sorry, I should have said, I'm on the other side and you are. Oh, I'm so confused. Sounds of crying, trying to compose himself, somewhat composed. Okay, since it is so important to you how I have died, here is how it happened. The completely ordinary, foolish, insignificant death of a completely ordinary, foolish person. I climbed on the mountain behind the bhajan kutia. I knew I should have stopped at a certain point, get back to the chanting. But you know, my foolish mind, once it has a plan, it forces me to complete it. Just like in my younger days, when I bought that complete set of Sigmund Freud's speculations on psychology. In the middle I realized, wait a minute, this man is too much, he's obsessed by his own mind. But I could not stop. Dutifully, I read the whole 15 volumes. What a torture. By the way, everything which I write, except for one little exaggeration, is truthful in this. This is important to know, I hadn't said it. So on and on I climbed. It started to rain. The rest went very fast. I slipped towards that slope, fell down the abyss, and landed on my skull. Everything as if in super slow motion. Then came that explosion. So much light, life racing by. Prabhupada, Krishna, Radha Madan Mohan, my innumerable mistakes. The next thing I knew was that some terrible looking person grabbed me. Ooh, the Yamadutas, please don't touch me, I screamed. I'm a devotee. They only laughed. That's what they all say when we come. You're an imposter. And now I'm waiting what will happen next. Continued on day 16. Sorry, the verse in glorification of Srimati Radharani comes later in better literary surroundings. It's a dark cave, chiseled with brutal force by some kind of heavy equipment into the rock. I am not alone, but in some ways I am. The persons who surround me in their transparent bodies are all totally confused and in a state of utter shock. They appear to be totally isolated from each other. Yet they look like workers being driven early in the morning to some meaningless work, completely alone in an overcrowded bus. It's clear. Most of them cannot understand what just happened to them. They are dead now, but still continuing on in existences colored like solidified, strongly diluted milk. Sorry, that's the best I can explain it. Suddenly the door at the end opens. A few terrible-looking Yamadutas pull a group of people with a well-trained routine out of the cave. The people are screaming in terror, in expectation of some unknown destiny. As I'm perceiving all this, I'm also panicking. What will be with me? After some time, was it short or long? Anyways, I have to speak in concepts I'm used to. So after some time, it was my turn. By now I had collected that much of my memory that I was knowing what to expect. Yamaraj will judge me for all my mistakes. However, I was not taken out in a group. No, I was clearly singled out by only one Yamaduta who looked just a little bit more refined than the others. But the expression on his face was heavy. Don't ask any questions, he seemed to say, when he led me through a complicated net of paths into a big hall. On the way, I feverishly prepared my appeal so that I was prepared what to say. Yamaraj, it's all a mistake. I'm a devotee. I did lots of service to Krishna. I should not be here. For people like me, at least a nice human birth in an aristocratic or a religious family is guaranteed.
not getting roasted, sliced, hung, pierced, and all of that, which is meant for sinners. Listen, please, to my bonus list. I translated the Gita into the German language. I have made many devotees and tried to guide a few. It was all selfless service. I organized big preaching events and spoke at countless programs. I performed austerities like difficult Kartik Vratas. And I made pilgrimages to the most holy places on planet Earth, which will all promise the pilgrim a liberation after this life. You surely must know the benefit of Panch Ganga Snan and Kashi, don't you? And on I went, and felt at the end a little secure that I should be able to impress the Almighty Judge with such words. Who can present such a list to Yamaraj? But when I finally came into the hall of Yamaraj and was announced to him by his secretary, my confidence fell into pieces. All I remember now was a four-word sentence. Here is a Dharma Dvashi, a pretender, a religious showman. That's when I panicked a second time. Or was it already the third time? I could not listen as Chitragupta read down a precise list of my innumerable offenses and mistakes, starting with my late childhood. In brackets, once I remember, he told a hidden secret of my childhood, where in blind childhood fury, I had almost killed the leader of the gang from the fisher village, 15 kilometers from our home. Yamaraj seemed to just listen and listen. As I could not look into his eyes and was anyways too disturbed to do or think anything sensible, I had to look down on the floor. After what seemed to be a long time, I was finally again so much in control of my emotions that I could hear something, but only parts. He took sannyas. This is Chitragupta. He took sannyas. But he was not seeing every situation equally, nor was he actually renounced. He took money which should have been used for Bhagavan's service, to build a safe comfort zone around himself. Oh no! Please leave that out! But Chitragupta continued, as a spiritual leader, but he was too immature to handle this responsibility and often gave wrong advice. For example, there is a Frank who, as a result of his preaching premature renunciation, later got into drugs. Oh no! And on, not one detail was left out. I can't relate everything. It looks too bad for me. How can I know who's listening here? Oh no, not again! That's typically me. Even now I'm trying to make a better impression of myself than the actual fact. But Yamaraj did not react. Yes, no reaction from Yamaraj. I had heard from Shastra that he usually would get more and more angry as his secretary would read the offense list of an individual soul. Finally, he would manifest a terrifying form with many arms holding weapons. And then when the offense list has ended, he would kind of explode and judge the sinner. 50,000 years in hell trying to push a stone up a glowing hot mountain with naked feet, so that he will finally learn not to ask people to do meaningless things again. But there was not a sign of Lord Yamaraj. When I finally dared to look up, Yamaraj's highly intelligent eyes were resting on me. He had a beautiful saintly appearance with a scrutinizing stern glance. It seemed he was concentrating and looking for some intuition. Suddenly, his face took a pained expression. Stop, he ordered. something is wrong here. Yes, I thought, it's me. What is his name again? Sachinanda Swami, disciple of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, came the answer. Stop! Yamaraj called out, not again! Then he rushed over to me, his beautiful white cape waving behind him, and grabbed my hands. Why do they make such terrible mistakes? I was by now resigned to the unavoidable. Everything, absolutely everything, will be revealed about me in this court of universal justice. Yamaraj continued now with angry eyes. My Yamadutas! Ultimately, I am responsible. They have again brought a sinless person to me. Just like that exalted Gornitai worshipper from Rimuna. Did I not repeatedly told them, my dear servants, please bring to me only those sinful persons who do not use their tongues to chant the holy name and qualities of Krishna, whose heart do not remember the lotus feet of Krishna even once, and whose heads do not bow down even once before Lord Krishna. Send me those who do not perform their duties towards Vishnu, which are the only duties in human life. Bring me all such fools and rascals. Then he turned to me and embraced me. You are a Hare Krishna chanter. You are a saint to be worshipped by all. I'm so sorry. But also glad to have you here. After offering you some prasad and rest, please do Nam Kirtan in my temple. Then he leaned towards me and said confidentially, but with a smile I could not immediately assess, did you also saw Krishna at the moment of death? 346 years ago, in your time calculation, my servants brought by mistake a great devotee of Lord Gauranga from Utkala, who showed me an interesting manuscript written by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, where the Acharya writes what devotees of Krishna see at death. Then Yamaraj ordered an intelligent-looking, handsome associate of his to bring what looked like a treasure chest, from which he took an old but well-conserved manuscript, which he began to read to me with enthusiastic voice. When a devotee who has practiced devotional service all his life and is intensely eager to see the Lord and to directly serve Him leaves his gross body, the Lord and His associates come to him at least once and grant him a personal vision and the opportunity for service, even though he may not have attained the higher degrees of love, such as sneha, etc., which come after the attainment of prema. This is what happened to Narada Muni in the Bhagavad. It is at the time of giving such a vision that the Lord bestows the eternal spiritual body upon the practicing aspirant. It took time to digest this new turn of events and readjust. I should have been the most relieved person in the universe, but I felt indescribable pain inside. Something in this whole situation was not right. Here I was celebrated all of a sudden for something I was not. Me, a saint? With the personal darshan of the Lord? In Yamaraj's presence, however, I felt confident to express myself. He is one of the 12 Mahajans. It looked so grave and saintly that I had to think how to express myself. But then my pain broke out. It came all out. What you had heard from your secretary is totally correct. I misused the greatest gift, and therefore I am greatly to be punished. But Yamaraj would not allow me to speak further. You are so fortunate. You were accepted by the greatest of saints. Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, a pure servant of Lord Gauranga. That's all that counts here. Mahaprabhu's servants have the power to deliver a person from all his karma. You must have heard about Jaga and Madai. Of course I interrupted him. But after they were accepted, they did not sin again. Just like the Lord had told them. But I, an insincere, ungrateful person, desperately clung to all kinds of unacceptable behavior. Enviousness towards even devotees. I was a diplomat, a profit-hungry vulture, and prepared to go through lies when hunting for my miserable reputation. I even enjoyed being worshipped by other devotees, although I was a wolf in disguise. Yamaraj looked at me with tears of happiness in his eyes. "Good that you say this," he said in a changed voice. "Although I see it differently, you had to see your life like this. This is Krishna's way of arranging for his devotees' purification. They have to sometimes see hell in a dream and learn." With this I awoke. It's the end. A final note. The idea that devotees sometimes see hell as if in a dream is taken from the Mahabharata, where Yudhishthira, just before his ascent to the heaven and then the spiritual world, saw the hellish situation and the people suffering in hell, his brothers suffering in hell. And that a devotee sometimes sees what is up for him in the future. That is taken from an interesting verse and purport from Srimad Bhagavatam 4:29-69. The Prabhupada writes, "Why we see things not experienced in this life is explained herein. That which we see is the future expression of what is already stocked in our mental stockpile. Because a Krishna conscious person does not have to accept a future gross body, his recorded desires are fulfilled in the dream. We therefore sometimes find things in a dream never experienced in our present life." It is said that Lord Shiva, the Lord of Transformation, whom devotees worship as the greatest devotee, takes two baths, one in the Ganga, that is seen, that's an external bath, and an internal bath in the Yamuna. Sanatana Goswami says, similarly, the Supreme Lord's fame purifies his devotees in two ways. Internally, by cleansing their hearts of intention for material enjoyment, and externally, by absolving them from hellish punishment. Hare Krishna. I'm still not very sure if you all could enjoy this heavy story. Maybe it was a mistake to say it. Maybe it was just the right thing. This is how I felt. A great sinner who has a great opportunity now as a devotee and who wants to go to the retreat, just like all of you, to experience a transformation in his life so that he can be a better servant, a better devotee. Every spiritual, and now I will start with my more conventional lecture. Every spiritual tradition knows that before real spiritual life, the false or material identification of a practitioner or as a devotee has to change. May I ask you, how was it for you to hear this story? Did you notice that it was a real story for me, or it was when the day turned black and I cut myself and then I rested. I had this a dream, like a very strong vision, and then I just wrote it down. And it's so easy. devotees have said when they heard this, they were thinking like, I read it once in Split, so devotees, they thought, oh, what if such a mistake or whatever, such a situation would happen in my life. Jagupad, we will just take this kind of, because it's very big. Yes. Then you can take the other small candle for the date, which is also very bright. This is a candle which a Christian monk donated to me. He said, you're going to Vrindavan for deep things, take this candle, we take it for our meditation. Excuse me, please? Or we can put it towards the deities, maybe? Would they be... we have to put... Or we can be very romantic with candles, isn't it? It is more romantic.
Thank you.
I know some of the devotees will helplessly fall asleep because they usually do so much service, but that's also all right. It will pick up most properly. It's yeah. This is a special candle which will not lose wax. It is from the meditational people who go to meditation and they can't have flames on their altars. Yes. Is it acceptable for you, this type of life? It's much better without the laying of the sound blanket over the beautiful atmosphere of Braj, the generator blanket. Yeah, my dear devotees, it's good that we had a pause now. I'm a little bit more relieved. That every spiritual tradition knows that before real spiritual life takes place, there must be a transformation of the heart. Prabhupada writes in the second chapter that this change of the heart is the whole purpose of Krishna consciousness. He writes this in a commentary to a verse which says, which is a critique by Jiva Goswami to the hard-hearted people. He said, when there is chanting of the name going on and there are no transformations in the heart except ecstatics and transformations, and such a heart is made of steel. It's very, very easy to transform your frisura, or what is it called, haircut. It's very easy to transform your dress. It's not so easy, but it's possible to say, instead of hello, Haribol, that is you transform your language and maybe some of your culture. But it is really not so easy to transform the heart. The heart is a place where desires come up, the place where all desires appear, and where all desires ultimately merge. The change of the heart, in other words, is the change of the citta or consciousness, the place of our desires. There are many stories all throughout traditions where people set upon a spiritual path, trying sincerely to transform themselves, but failing. There is, for instance, in the Christian tradition, one church father, Origenes, who tried to live in celibacy with a sincere attempt to overcome his carnal desires. Finally, he felt so desperately that the only solution which he thought to stop being lusty was to mutilate his private parts. Desperately failing. There is also in our tradition Shobari Muni, who was so accomplished in his yoga practice that he was able to sit in the Yamuna on the bottom of the river and withholding his breath and doing his yoga practice. This is a very, very high practice of yoga. I believe I have heard from Prashanta Mataji that she practiced yoga, and those who have done so know that there is a stage where you can withhold your breath, but he did this for months. Imagine, he was so accomplished. But his heart was not changed. When he saw a fish couple with romantic intentions approaching themselves, he felt so much stimulated. Old sanskaras came forth that he could no longer hold his yoga practice and had to quickly come to the air again to breathe like we mortals do. He thought, missed, it didn't work out, left his yoga practice and married eventually 50 princesses, 50, not one, not two, not 10, 50. At the end of their lives, when they were old, they had an Ishta Gosti. So Bari was asking them. He did many things to try to become satisfied, but nothing worked. Or do you feel satisfied? And in one chorus they answered, no! We have failed to worship Hrishikesha, the master of the senses. And then he preached to them, and they all became devotees, practicing devotees at the end of their lives. But this is a positive ending. We in our society have many negative endings of devotees who, with the sincerest of intentions, joined the movement for Krishna consciousness. It later ended in very embarrassing situations where they were even requested to not appear in the temple any longer because they had behaved in ways which were just totally unacceptable and harmful also for others. We have examples of people giving up drugs and sex and rock and roll and entering into the temple with a blazing brahmachari bald heads, but after some time going back to the same locations from where they came. All because the heart was not transformed. The transformation of a heart is described in an example which Srila Sanatan Goswami quotes in his Hari Bhakti Vilas. He says, it's an example which we find in the alchemistic traditions of Europe as well. Copper can, just like copper, can be turned into gold by the treatment of specially treated mercury. In the same way, a devotee can be changed in the association of his guru. This is one translation which I have read. There are other translations as well. My dear devotees, look for a moment from the scientific point of view into the question, what do you think would have to be done to change ordinary metal, bell metal is also sometimes said, into gold? We want to understand the example of Sanatana Goswami. What would have to be done, a student of physics could tell us, you would have to go into the atomic structure, the finest structure of this metal, and change atoms around. A force is required for doing this, which is as strong as the atom explosion. It is very, very strong stuff we are talking about when we talk about transforming one element into another. Superficially, I can paint bell metal with a golden color, and people not educated what is real gold might accept it for gold. But this type of false gold would not survive even one normal European winter. The color gold would fall off very quickly, and then you would see ordinary metal. I was cheated. This is also what you can externally behave like a devotee very, very easily. Devotees will say, Sadhu Maharaj, and so on. But the change of heart, the real devotee, is very difficult. Very difficult. It is something internal, something very deep. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti at the end of Madhurya Kadambani explains to us what exactly the transformation of heart means. We spoke of desire earlier, but this is still a superficial level of when we transformation of the heart has to take place on the heart of on the platform of desire. But we have to go deeper into the deepest structures of our being if we really wish a transformation. He says the ahankara has to be changed or transformed. The sense of our identity. The Thakur explains that ahankara has two aspects. Ahanta, or self-identification, and mamata, or possessiveness. Material life is full of I ams. I am a professional. I am a devotee. I am a Sachinandan Swami. I am this type, and so on. And it is full of minds. These are my interests, my ways, my goals, and so on. Around the little ahankara, which we so conveniently ignore, is a whole world of mine, which extends very far. Look at my world. It extends to Germany. My bicycle was stolen, so I can't say my bicycle any longer. There are my people who I know. There is my favorite dishes waiting, my ways, my retreats, my dhotis are certainly waiting, and so on. And since I'm a devotee, I've traveled all over Europe. They are everywhere in the world of mine, so on. Yes. By the transformative, I will give not so deep, I will give other examples. Vishwanath Chakravarti says it's fixed on my wife, my children, my wealth, my property, my nationality, and so on. By the transformative power of bhakti, this ahankara with its two functions needs to be transformed into I am a servant of the Lord, just like his associates. And the Lord is the object of my service, mine. He's mine in this sense. My master, my friend, my son, my lover. You will need to think all what you think now in terms of ahammameti in the material sense. Ultimately, if you have gone through the alchemistic transformation of copper into gold, you will think of I and mine totally in relationship to Krishna and your service to Krishna in one of your rasas, in one of your relationships. This is what we will all have to go through. At the beginning, when we are still at the stage of what the Thakur says, anishta bhakti, unsteady devotional service, the spiritual concepts will be very, very small, and the material concepts very big. As we continue to the platform of steady devotional service and beyond, the material concepts will have to become smaller, smaller and smaller, and the spiritual concepts and identifications bigger and bigger, bigger. There's a whole world waiting for us beyond the prison of Ahankara, beyond the I and mine. This is what is meant with transformation of the heart in the ultimate sense. What this demolish, let me say, transformation of ego means is explained at the very end of the Bhagavatam by Shukadev Goswami to his learned disciple Parikshit Maharaj. Just before Shukadev Goswami does his last preaching to prepare his disciple for ultimate death, he talks about four kinds of annihilation. The constant, the naimittika, that means occasional, the prakriti, which is the total annihilation, and the isolation, the annihilation which is called adyantika, or the ultimate annihilation. And I will tell you what these three kinds of annihilations mean, and then I will drop my greatest point in this lecture, what the fourth annihilation means. The constant annihilation, and I have forgotten to write the Sanskrit word down, means what is going on constantly in the cells of our bodies, the constant changes of which are there from old age, from youth to old age, and so on. What Krishna speaks about in the Gita and the six kinds of transformations. You know, I think it was impregnation, growth, birth, growing, producing offsprings, dwindling, and so on. These constant transformations which you all have experience of. The day turns into night, the night turns into day. The first. The occasional or naimittika annihilations, I'm sorry, I'm speaking of annihilations, not transformations, annihilations, is each night of Brahma, when everything from the middle planetary systems downwards gets annihilated and created again. And then the prakriti annihilation, that is after 100 years of Brahma, when everything, including the higher planetary systems, are annihilated. These are the three annihilations which are there in the world. Then Shukadev Goswami gets his disciple and says, now I will talk about the fourth annihilation. The fourth annihilation is the annihilation of the ego. When the illusion, I will read to you, when the illusory false ego that binds the soul has been cut off with the sword of discriminating knowledge of Lord Achyuta, the Supreme Soul, this is called adyantika, or the ultimate annihilation of material existence. Then he says to his disciple, now comes the preacher. It's no longer philosophy. It's really tough spiritual work. Give up the animalistic mentality. I'm going to die, Parikshit. It is the soul who observes. It is the soul who is unborn and eternal. Thinking you are going to die is just like seeing one's head cut off in a dream. It cannot happen. You can't see your head being cut off in a dream, because once the head is cut off, you can't see any longer. It's biologically not possible. So you cannot possibly die. But your ego will tell you this fear of death. By the way, it is described in our scriptures that fear of death can only be given up on the platform of Ashakti, that is, attachment to Krishna. In other words, the soul must become free from the coverings of one's eternal Krishna consciousness. This is what we have to come to, dear devotees. The cloud of ego has to be torn away by the sun, so that we can see the sun. In the same way, Krishna ultimately has to help us to tear away this cloud of false ego which is covering the soul. You might ask the question, so many have failed, so Bari Muni has failed, Origenes has failed, at least in the beginning. How can I transform the ego? We should give up this retreat at the beginning. Now we should give it up. We should be honest. It's not possible for me where others have failed. But it is correct. Alone you cannot do this. You need Krishna's help. Krishna has created the material energy, and with it the ego. And it is Krishna who can dissolve this ego. Only Krishna. It is the sun who has produced the cloud which covers the sun, and it is the sun only who can tear through the sun by its powerful rays and dissolve the cloud. Where can you find Krishna is the next question. Krishna can be found in acts of bhakti. It is said, Shrinvata Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyantasto Shabadrani Vidunoti Suritsatam. By hearing about Krishna, that's one of the acts of bhakti, Shravanam, and also Kirtanam. By hearing about Krishna, Shrinvata, the verse actually speaks here of Shravanam. By hearing about Krishna, the super soul in the heart becomes active to destroy the inauspicious things in the heart. In the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 25th verse, third canto, 25th chapter, verse 33. Those who write along, it is always good to note these and read these verses which I wish to highlight. Read them in your private reading time. It says like this, Jarayat yashu yakosham nigirnam anuloyata. Bhakti, devotional service, dissolves the subtle body of the living entity without separate effort, just as fire in the stomach digests all that we eat. The bhakti can dissolve the subtle body of ego, just like fire dissolves at the moment your food which you have eaten at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It works without your knowledge, because within the acts of bhakti, Lord Krishna is there. Bhujan Prabhu has very briefly highlighted One very important point of this retreat, he has spoken the word Panchanga Bhakti, and those of you who were very attentive were jumping on this word, but some of us might have been tired and not yet fully attentive, and we might have not taken notice of this important point. Krishna can be found in the Panchanga Bhakti, that is Sadhu Sangha, Bhagavat Smaran, hearing and remembering the Bhagavat, then the Naam, the holy name, then the Murti Seva, service of the deities, and finally Dhamvas, living in the Dham. Here we have all this. Sadhu Sangha is readily available. There are many devotees of here who are very advanced and who live in the Dham and whose association we can have. We will listen to the Bhagavat Tam by an expert who has already compiled the Gita study, and we will listen about important points from the Bhagavatam in proper association. We will hear about the glories of Naam, and we will have a 64-round stay where we chant the Naam. We have Murtis, and we are here in the Dham. All of you should privately, when no one sees it, so that you don't do it for name and fame, go somewhere near Giriraj, throw yourself in the dust and just put it all over you. No cleanliness phobias are allowed at that time, so that the Dham can work on you. I mean, the Dham can also work in other ways. This is not a need or something. It's said in the Krishna book, when Akura came, he threw himself in the dust. And Prabhupada says, this is the way to enter the Dham. But Dham was, do you know why we are not in Krishna Balaram temple? We have so much convenience there, we have stored our things. Because in Krishna Balaram temple, we have an international missionary post where devotees come from all over with many agendas. I know the German agendas always buy the necessary things on Loi Bazaar and so on. There is an atmosphere which has many things which are just and need to be taken care of. It's not meant as a critic. We are here in an isolation from everything else, so that we can only do the Panchanga Bhakti and nothing else. This is the reason and the concept behind it. Maybe there are other concepts as well, but I know of this one. Because Krishna can be found in these bhakti activities. He can be contacted. These activities have the potency, says Krishna Das Kaviraj, to involve prema, our original love for Krishna. So, I'm coming to the end. If I would be Gaur Govinda Maharaj, I would at this moment sing to you a song, but I cannot sing so nicely, so I will just say it. Trina dikahina kaveni jamani sahishnuta guna hedaye ani sakala manara apani amani hoye ashvadivo namara sasa. It means, now what Lord Chaitanya has told us, how we can, the other thing which is very necessary to attack our ego. The bhakti will dissolve our subtle body, but you must perform bhakti in the right mood. If you don't perform bhakti in the right mood, you will perform it in rajagun and with tamagun, with all material interest, mixed bhakti. You have to perform it in this mood. When will I feel myself lower than a blade of grass? When the quality of tolerance will come in my heart? So nice. When will I show respect to all others and not seek honor for myself? Then I will be able to taste the essence of the nectar of the holy name. Krishna can be found especially, Lord Chaitanya says, and this I don't want to tell the highlights of tomorrow's lecture, especially in the holy name. And there, but you have to chant it in the mood of Trinadapi Sahishnuna Sunichena. Oh, this is that. Taroapi Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. Mr. Verse Learner, everything falls out of your memory when you think of transformation. yes, Prabhus. Yes, respected Matajis. We have to... This is the other point. The acts of bhakti, they will work with this Trinadapi Sunichena. You can chant so many rounds and it will be only a counting game. One round, two rounds, 64, 128, almost 170, wow, only one more. And nothing much happens because you have fed your ego with the numbers of the round. You can run into the forest. Previously you were a king, now you are a beggar. You can be emaciated internally and a fat man. So you can be emaciated externally and a fat man, an ugly fat man internally with an inflated false ego. This Trinadapi remains the key for entering. And tomorrow I will read to you from Brihad Bhagavatamrita that the basis of bhakti is dainya, that is the sense of utter humility. This is necessary. Srila Prabhupada was an expert, and with this we come to the end, in sometimes cutting the false ego, like a true spiritual master has to do. Once the name is in every book, so I can also say it. Our Tamal, Krishna, at that time Brahmachari, was a temple commander of Los Angeles. And he must have been a heavy temple commander when Prabhupada called him into his room and he said, "Tamal, there is Lord Krishna from whom the whole spiritual world emanates. In this spiritual world there are many incountable Vaikuntha planets, much bigger than planet Earth. In a tiny insignificant corner is the material world with one quarter only of the spiritual. And there are many universes. The universes are many planets. One planet is planet Earth, with many continents. One is America, with many states. One is California, with many towns. One is Los Angeles, with many streets. One is Hollywood Boulevard, with many, many buildings." Sometimes they have numbers like 2,100 in America. And there's one building, this is here, with many rooms. There's one person called Tamal who thinks he controls it all. It was a bomb. It was a lesson in Trinadapi. So on. Let me summarize so that you don't have to ask questions and we don't have to spend more time on this. Transformation of the ego, this work is our second chance. We may have done many things in our spiritual life. If we don't take up the fourth annihilation, or let us call it more more generously, the transformation, then this will not be of great avail. This is what we want to accomplish a little bit in this retreat. We want to become more into I am a servant of Krishna and mine is my service to Krishna. This is all I have in this world. The holy name and so on, these spiritual things. And we want to do this transformation by contacting Krishna mainly through Panchanga Bhakti, but also of all the Panchanga Bhaktis through the holy name. This will be my presentation, but and we wish to practice Trinarapi Sunichena Taro Iva Sahishnuna, and so on and so forth. Let me tell you, I thank you very, very much for listening to this so patiently. Thank you very much for talking about this. I'm really not in the role of saying, you must do this, you must do this. I have to do this. And that's why I started with the truthful vision and truthful story. Thank you very much for listening. And Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Giriraj Govardhan ki jai, Go Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.